The following episode may contain some adult themes and language. It may not be suitable for small humans.
No, there's no professional rivalry.
Really?
Input. No!
I thought there would be, like you'd hurl eggs at each other or something. No.
Then once every 7 years, we lose our shit completely and run around pants on head, ready to beat people to death.
Hi, I'm the destroyer of worlds, an ender of humanity, or Dawer for short. But John just uses me to fix his mistakes on the podcast. John would like to apologize for forgetting to record Adam's microphone for the first 4 minutes. All will be rectified in time. After that first 4 minutes, we will be back to our regular high-quality recording standard.
Hello, and welcome to Surviving the Apocalypse, The Nerd's Way. I'm your host, Adam.
And I'm your other host, John.
He likes to say that. But we're here today on location in a fantastic, basically my weakness.
If you can smell that smell while you're listening to this podcast,
it's
actually fresh books.
Fresh books, yes. Straight from the farm to the table. We are at Stefan's Books in Perth City, and we have the man of the hour himself here with us. Hello, Stefan. How are you?
I'm very well. Thanks for playing.
Oh, that's all right. Thank you for having us. So we've been wanting to do this for probably well over a year now at this stage.
Yeah. Procrastination of me is mainly at fault.
Oh, there's been things going on, conventions, and the store has moved.
Not only that, just general laziness as well. That's not like. we're here. We've been here for about, how long has it been? We've been here for about, maybe an hour or so. I've already claimed like 3 or 4 books now. Stefan is a master at getting basically selling you books. It's fantastic, it's glorious.
That's what I do.
Yeah, that's what you do.
I might add that I like to think that I connect people with books they'll actually like rather than just browbeating them into taking something.
You won't read this. Yeah,
I remember I had a busy week at work and it was my wife's birthday the next day and I was on my way home from work. And luckily I worked just down the road from Stefan's book. So on my way home, I was like, okay, Stefan, I need your help. I need to buy my wife a gift. She loves reading. Here's all the things she likes. And then you're like, okay, this, this, and this. And basically all the things that Stefan recommended, I later talked to my wife, and she was like, yeah, I've actually been wanting to read that for ages. And she loved the book that I ended up getting. So
massively insightful. It's quite terrifying, to be perfectly honest.
So he knows what book you want better than you do.
And he doesn't even have to, like... He doesn't even have to look when he grabs the book. I've noticed that he can just pull a book out of
that was
there.
That was a one-off thing. I happened to be standing directly in front of the area of the shelf where the thing you were talking about was, and I'd only shelved it earlier that day, so I was a little bit behind the curtain. Wasn't quite as magical. I happened to be there and thought, well...
Make me believe the magic.
Yeah, it's magic.
Reach behind and produce it like magic.
What was horrifying about the whole incident is that you were having a conversation with someone else. And whilst I was talking with, I can't remember who it was because it was on that Bucks night, and we're having the conversation, and you maintain that conversation and eye contact with the person, and just pulled that book out and handed it to me.
You have to eavesdrop like a bastard. Yeah. You do. A lot of people won't ask a question. They'll talk amongst themselves.
Yeah. Oh, no, you can't.
And they won't walk up to you and go, I'm about to ask a stupid question. There's this book with this guy with a leg. And I overhear that and go, I actually know the thing you're talking about. Mm. But you won't ask me because you think it's daft. So you kind of have to wander over and go, is this your card? And they just kind of blink at you. It's even funnier when you're receiving product. And I'll regularly get in cartons and cartons of books. And so I'm processing stuff to put on the shelf. And a lot of it is really popular stuff. And so someone will come in and they'll ask for something that's relatively recent and popular that I've just received stock of. And so I'll have it sitting right next to me. And so they'll ask for something and you just kind of hand it to them 5 seconds later. And they go, oh, it's magic. And no, not really. It's just, there's like 200 books I'm getting ready to shelve. Mm. The chances were good that you'd want one of them.
That's fair. Where in the city, what's the address of the shop?
We are at 431 Murray Street, which is a little bit closer to Milligan Street than it is to the Murray Street Mall. So we used to be in Shafto Lane. Mm-hmm. We're now out on Murray Street. If you walk out of Shafto Lane from our old store onto Murray Street and take a left, we are probably 80, 90 metres up the road. So, and a bigger location, brighter, big bay windows. It's
all
nicer.
More for those books.
Absolutely.
Glorious things. I mean, honestly, I am in heaven at the moment. It's cool. Ah, so good. So good.
This is when John realised his mistake. Thank you for your patience.
Welcome back. Yes, apologies for that. We had just realised that John was attempting to silence my glorious voice.
I was.
We're on to you, John. You can't silence me. So we're not going to start the podcast over again. I'm sure you heard the announcement from Dalware. And we're going to continue on with our conversation.
Nice. Technical difficulties over. I didn't pronounce difficulties right, but anyway.
John, the whole of this podcast is talking.
Yes.
Let's get our words right.
Okay. I'll let you guys speak then.
Well, you can get them wrong. This is speculative fiction. Get them wrong, but just own it.
Oh, yep. Nice.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that's what Trump does. No, I'm kidding. Come and have a look and check out Stefan's books on Murray Street. It's fantastic. You're going to love it. And if you don't, well, obviously there's something wrong with you and you don't have a soul.
And I'm paying these guys nothing for this.
This is true. Yeah. Oh, we've plugged your bookshop many times.
I know. I've heard. And then you come in and give me money. I love my job.
There was that story that we got a free book every time that we mentioned the shop. That's not true, but Adam will buy a book every time we mention it.
It's free because I also take one that he doesn't know about. No, I'm kidding.
Wait, hang on.
To be fair, you haven't asked me for anything to plug the store.
No, of course not.
So if you had at the beginning, who knows what might have happened.
That's the podcast we're going. No. So already, us being in the bookshop, Stefan has recommended a book that we're both going to be getting.
Yes.
Would you like to tell us about that book?
It's called How to Invent Everything. And it's by Ryan North, who I believe has a history in sort of comics and science. And it is basically a how-to guide to recreate civilization.
Hmm.
So should you find yourself unexpectedly sucked back in space and time, this book, if you've got it in your pocket at the time,
which I will.
Need to be a substantial pocket. It's a hardcover.
satchel bag.
Will allow you to figure out where you are, when you are, and give you basic instructions on how to recreate the fundamentals of civilization, from brewing beer, making bread, to aqueducts, metallurgy, forging, and right up to things like sort of early steam engines and all that sort of stuff.
See, I'm not sure about you guys, but me personally, if I'm in the shower, this is where my mind generally goes. Okay. I'm standing there with the water running over me, and I often think, what would happen if some type of vortex were to suck me back in time? Back, who knows, like we go prehistoric, we can go Victorian, we could go wherever. But just having this information is vital to having just an edge in survival. I mean, imagine going back in time and realizing, here's how you make penicillin, black plague. And, you know. Yeah.
There's actually some maps of constellations in the book that you can look up and it'll tell you when you are, not just where you are. So, you know, I'm in this era, or I'm in the Cambrian or the Jurassic. Or look around you and what sort of animals are around you, what sort of plants are around you. Mm-hmm. If there's this, you're here. It is stunning. It's trivia and deep geek science writ large. It's magic.
And I love it. You just said basically science is magic.
Mm.
Yep.
Kind of, but not really.
But yeah, I am so psyched about this book, and already it's sold out, isn't it?
I don't have any copies left at the moment. This is one of my great character flaws, is often I'll allow my enthusiasm to outrun my stock.
Yep, that's fair. So myself and John, we're going to pick up a book each. And we're going to buy an extra copy, and we're going to do a competition to give it away. Just in case, we like to prepare our listeners, just in case you are sucked back in time. Of course, you're going to have to be the winner, but I mean, who knows? Cosmic chance may come into play here.
I imagine it would also be useful if all the society collapses and you have to rebuild everything from scratch.
Which is what this podcast is all about.
I believe, Stefan, you mentioned that it would teach you how to make beer from scratch, even if you don't even have yeast.
Well, you need to start with yeast. So if you want beer, first you need flour. So you need wheat, and you need to grind up the wheat and make flour, and then you need to... And it'll tell you how to make a millstone as well.
Oh, wow.
And then you put
that's awesome.
Yeah. Then you put the flour and water in a container, and it'll also tell you how to make pottery and stuff. And you leave it out and look for some wild yeast. Eventually, wild yeast will settle in there and it'll start to bubble. And then you throw 90% of it away, replace it with more flour and more water. And over time, you keep doing that until what you've done is bred a type of yeast that is particularly good at respiration with whatever flour that you happen to have. And so now you have yeast. So now you can start thinking about fermentation. You can make bread too, but now you can start thinking about fermentation. And so it's like,
This is so cool.
It's very, very useful. Because let's face it, I don't know how familiar you are with Douglas Adams, but pretty much everybody I know is BARC material. There's, I know a handful of people who make and do things and a handful of people who know really important things, and the rest of us work in things that don't really have a useful skill set.
No. That's fair. That's fair. No, the but this is amazing. I love the idea of this because, as you said, I mean, it goes through like smelting and stuff like that as well, doesn't it? Like,
yeah, it's all sorts of stuff.
Oh, man. So pick it up, folks.
Even tells you where to find stuff. There's like if you're thrown back in time, where early deposits of things. It also tells you when things were done in history. So even if you're not interested in the kind of the, you know, zombie apocalypse, end of the world thing, you just want to know, when did people start doing X? There's a little potted history of how it actually happened, where it started, at least to the best of our knowledge. It's the most amazing mix of ideas, and it's very accessible, indexed, and got lots of... It's also got written with a very good sense of humour, so it's quite a fun read.
This sounds feel like a reference book. The type of book that our listeners would love.
That's why I mentioned it.
You're very good at your trade.
Stefan's book today. Luckily, John will take so long to edit it that it'll probably be in stock by the time you hear this.
This is true. Could be, yeah.
Well, I'll give the supplier a call on Monday and see if we can sort something out.
So good. So, speaking of apocalyptic books, so we've got something to prepare us now, something to guide us through some type of horrible apocalypse, because let's face it, I do not know... I want to learn, and this book will help me now, but I don't know how to forge a knife properly. No idea.
Nope. Me neither.
This will probably teach me how to do so.
I don't think anybody seems to care. If you look at the preppers and doomsday people, none of them seem particularly cared with how to make anything, build anything, do anything, or keep animals alive. They just want a bunch of guns. It's almost like they've just decided that the only way that they can survive, you know, any kind of societal collapse is to sort of make improbable armor out of rubber tires, get into dune buggies and hare around the desert. No one's thought about maybe we should just, I don't know, save some chickens.
love it. So now we have how to survive, but what type of scenarios in which to survive? And for that, we'd think a type of apocalyptic books, fiction or otherwise. So, Stefan, you have some apocalyptic books you want to discuss?
Yeah, there's like, I mean, I love the genre, but a lot of the stuff can get quite samey. There's like zombies and
same thing over and over again.
But there are people doing really good stuff in the space. One of my favorites is two books, in fact, by a fellow called Max Brailer. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with, you know, the old Choose Your Own Adventure stuff that used to come out, and it came in the 80s, and Warlock of Firetop Mountain, all that sort of stuff. He's done a couple of those. The first one is called Can You Survive the Zombie Apocalypse? And it's a Choose Your Own Adventure story for adults.
Oh, wow.
Set in a zombie apocalypse. So it's like, you know, you're running down the alley with Dave chased by zombies. You know, if you turn left and tell Dave to turn right, go to page blah. If you decide to climb the fire escape, even though it'll take you a few seconds to pull it down, go to page blah. If you shoot Dave in the leg so the zombies will get him first, go to page blah.
It's funny. You say this. We've done, and this is embarrassing to admit, but it is on the podcast anyways.
Oh, yeah.
We did the BuzzFeed quiz of will you survive an apocalypse, a zombie apocalypse? And John, what was your response?
I heroically sacrificed myself is what happens to me.
And I became a dictator in the post-apocalyptic world.
I couldn't get through the book. I tried multiple times. And so my short answer is no, I can't survive. And Max Brailer did his second book called Highway to Hell, which is a kind of riffing on the first one, but it's a you sort of Mad Max-y kind of weird, improbable desert warriors. Same sort of thing. Choose Your Own Adventure. Really, really good fun.
Choose Your Own Adventure apocalyptic book. So that sounds like a fascinating, very niche genre.
It's done really well. Yeah. And I think because the choose your own adventure thing is funny, but you never get offered the sort of options that as an adult that you would like, oh, you know, I want to, oh, look, I found a bunch of drug addicts on the top of a roof that have decided they're just going to do all the drugs and die because, you know, what's worth living for? And you got the option of staying.
It's like
you pull up a couch and a big fat crack pipe and, you know, let's face it, there's nothing worth living for anyway. Go out on a high.
Society burns around you. Yeah, fair enough. Oh, man. But
is that the way to win the book? Is that the only successful ending?
I understand there are successful endings. Okay. I haven't found one. I played it through two or three times and died. So I haven't made it a sort of dedicated study of it. I'm sure there must be, although it would be very funny if there isn't.
There is, yeah,
the zombie movie cliche pretty much doesn't have anybody living, you know. If you survive the film, you die in the closing credits.
I can't remember. That's all right. But my, I think with an apocalyptic book, and relevant as well, as we've discussed at last podcast, is Good Omens. I love the way it's written. I love the humor of it, like a bit of dark humor mixed in with some relatively lighthearted stuff as well. But it's, I love the closing lines of the books, like what a summer is to a child, if you will. But it's just funny. And of course, it's relevant because Good Omens, the TV production, is coming out on the 31st of May. And that's super excited for that. David Tennant as Crowley is going to be fantastic. And Michael Sheen as Aziraphale. How would you pronounce it? I've heard it pronounced
Aziraphale.
Aziraphale, yeah. I've heard Aziraphale, all sorts of stuff. But yeah, Aziraphale.
Look, it's one of those things. You won't know it. You don't know until the author says it. And you know, and if you're lucky, the author says it consistently. Some don't. H.P. Lovecraft was infamous for changing the pronunciation of most of his characters depending on who's talking to. Just he couldn't keep it straight either. So people are like,
I've done that in my D&D campaign. There's a godly weapon called Unalesh, and apparently I've pronounced it Athunalesh, Unalash, all sorts of stuff. So yeah, that seems to be a common theme.
That's just a deeper world you've constructed where there are multiple correct pronunciations.
Depending on high elven enunciation.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's fair, that's fair.
Accents. Yeah.
John, do you have a favorite apocalyptic book?
I like another one that Ryan North was involved in, which was it's not really apocalyptic though. This is how you die or something like that, where everyone would put their hand in and they find out how they die. But that's not quite apocalypse, is it? It's only the end of you, not the end of the world.
A personal apocalypse.
I'm trying to think that I also like the Hatchet book, which was more survival. For a host of us surviving the apocalypse podcast, I haven't actually read that many apocalyptic books.
Personal apocalypse. Personal apocalypse, it's reminds me of a joke. Many years ago, there was a program on the ABC called, I think it was Australia You're Standing in It. It was a comedy show, and there was a couple of characters who were like really dopey, called Tim and Debbie. And one of the characters was Tim, was like telling a story about he saw a guy in Rundle Mall who had a sign that said the end of the world was nigh, and the next day, right, he wasn't there. It's like they kind of, or the religious leader who predicted the end of the world for June such and such a year, predicted the world would end, and for him it did. The day he died.
Oh wow!
So the apocalypse is personal.
Yeah. True. Well, I think one of the apocalyptic books, quote unquote, and it's not out yet. It's going to be a trilogy, and this is going to lead into our next segment about guilty pleasure reading. For me, my guilty pleasure reading, and I've been dying to talk about this on the podcast for ages, but I've saved this to speak about with you, Stefan, because it's The Dresden Files. And I personally like The Dresden Files because it is a very easy read. It's literally, you can put it down, pick it up, put it down, pick it up. And it's about, as you mentioned before, and I didn't really think of that as a genre of noir, essentially. And it really is. It's literally noir.
Absolutely. Yeah, 100%. He's like the private eye in the dingy office with the dingy desk. And, all he needs is, a dame to come in with a bad story. Or, I met a man.
It's literally like that. It is 100% that. Like, he literally says that. I can't deny a woman in need type of thing, it's 100%. So Dresden Files, except once it's a noir, it's about wizards and magic and all that fun stuff. And I really like it. The new book, and what I wanted to ask you, because you have a bookshop and you would definitely know, I'm 100% sure, when is the next damn book coming out?
There's nothing scheduled. I've been keeping an eye on industry media and whether or not his editors know whether he's working on something or not, but there's certainly been no rumours in the industry press that I've seen.
Right. Yeah.
So I don't know what the deal is, whether or not he's working on something and not talking about it, whether or not he's not working. Really no idea. There's a whole bunch of people that want the next Cinderspires novel, the Aeronauts Windlass, which was his steampunk novel.
Yep.
Which is actually a really clever thing, because while I like the the tropes of steampunk. I don't really like the setting. You know, Victorian England is full of, you know, iniquity and poverty and, mm-hmm. and a whole bunch of problems. But, you know, big steamships flying across the sky is really epic. Cool and, you know, flashy clothes and mm-hmm. you know, dashing gentlemen are really cool. Can we just not have, you know, poor people dying of tuberculosis? And so so Cinder Spires basically has all the things you like about the visuals and the ideas of steampunk, but it's set in a kind of a fantasy world, mm-hmm. so it doesn't have to conform to all the brutality and cruelty of Victorian England. So you get the best of both worlds. It's mm-hmm. Aronaut's Windlass is the book, and it's a cracking read. Mm-hmm. And so now he has a whole another bunch of fans who were desperate for him to finish yeah. another series of books.
Because, I mean, he was releasing Dresden Files once a year.
Mm.
And it's been like 3 or 4 years since
yeah.
Cold Days. No, Skin Game.
Skin Game.
Yeah.
And the most recent release... was just short stories. And they weren't new short stories. They're things he'd done for other collections mm, and that sort mm. of stuff. So I think with urban fantasy, there's a couple of broad camps on what you like. There's the kind of Dresden Files camp. There is a very big Rivers of London mm. camp, which is also very, very cool. And then there's a bunch of others. There's a lot of the kind of urban fantasy romance, your Laurel K. Hamilton, that sort of stuff. Well, that's cool. Quite weird lately, but
yeah,
so there's lots of different styles. I'm personally, I'm a little bit more Rivers of London mm. than I am Dresden Files. I think
I was surprised because I picked it up, Year One by Nora Roberts, because mm. that kind of went into urban fantasy,
post apocalyptic superheroes with magic,
like that. Boom, straight. That's not really her wheelhouse, like as in
it's like Smarties and pasta sauce. It's like, what's going on here?
Wow,
the best analogy. I was. Yeah, because the premise actually sounded semi-interesting.
Mm.
And I'm reading through it, I'm just like, this book is not directed at me at all. This is for... this is targeted towards the demographic of women, because I did not get anything out of that book.
I'm not sure. I think it's for her readers who are coming to kind of genre fiction with magic and end of the world stuff from a different place.
Mm.
So she's added the level of that for that audience to sort of mix it through. And so sometimes when you're looking at a book that doesn't seem to sort of gel with you, it could be that the ratio of ingredients has been tuned for somebody who's coming to it from a yeah. different direction. They want more of X and less of Y.
Mm.
And so that little bit of Y that you think is deficient is in fact more than enough to add a bit of extra interest for somebody who's really just reading for X. And,
yeah.
And Nora Roberts knows her stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You know, she's got a phenomenal backlist and
the
massive loyal readers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like, it was... That was, like, from what I could tell, like, I didn't have any issues with her style of writing. It was just, as you say, like, there was a lot more focus on, like, the love and the feeling type of stuff. And that's... I'm a guy. I'm just... Hulk smash type of thing, you know?
Okay.
No, not really.
Made of stone, yeah. You know? I am a Vulcan, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's why I like Dresden Files.
Which is funny because the Vulcans are all complete fruitcakes.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, we live by logic. And then once every 7 years, we lose our shit completely and run around pants on head ready to beat people to death. Go, dude... Suggesting to me that you're in fact emotional all the time and you only release it in one mad crazy rage once every 7 years.
Mm.
Not healthy, dude.
No, that's fair.
Vulcans need scream therapy or something.
They need those break rooms. Oh,
they do.
I
yes.
really want to go to one of those. It's so good. But yeah, I haven't asked and I have been... this is a podcast where at least once an episode I mention Patrick Rothfuss.
Mm-hmm.
Whether in favour or dismay. But do you know anything about Doors of Stone?
No, mm-hmm. no, I don't. I don't know what the deal is. I've got a kind of personal theory on it, which is I think that he kind of lost the thread a little bit in the second book and ended up doing something perhaps he hadn't planned to do and now finds himself in a really strange situation. Because my reading of
Wise Man's Fear...
Both of them is that they're kind of very different feel.
Mm.
You know, the Name of the Wind has got a wonderfully sort of Sinbad, sort of Sinbad the Sailor kind of story with this guy telling a story of his life, and you're wondering how much of this is true. Is any of this true?
Yeah.
Which bits are true? There must be something at the kernel of this. You know, sifting through.
Yeah, the unreliable narrator.
Yeah. Mm. And trying to sift through this, looking for a deeper truth, felt to me like the point of it. But Wise Man's Fear is a different thing again. It kind of feels more like wise man's fear isn't about whether or not he's an unreliable narrator. By wise man's fear, I think you're supposed to see him as reliable, because wise man's fear is really about how incredible he was.
Hmm.
And so then the story of wise man's fear is, how did somebody with so much ability, so much power and so much potential end up falling? It's kind of like the fall of Lancelot.
Yeah.
Rather than Sinbad.
That's a good comparison. I like that.
And so I find there's a bit of a disconnect between the two stories. And I want both of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want...
Yeah.
I want a final book where Kvothe walks out of the bar and you're still never entirely sure what you've heard. And I also want the one that explains how he could rise to such a height and then fall so low. But I don't think you can do both in one book.
There seems to be a lot left, and because it's only one book, I'm thinking it might be something like Brandon Sanderson's done with Oathbringer and all Way of Kings and everything, where it's split into two, like part one, Doors of Stone, part two, Doors of Stone.
Yeah.
But for me, the big draw for Rothfuss is his use of language.
Mm.
Like, that's what I love about him, essentially. I just, it's such a draw. Like, when I read his stuff... Like, the most heartbreaking scene for me out of all fiction was when Kvothe had been poisoned with plum blob, depending on, you know, whatever. But anyway, he's laying in his room and he's weeping and sad because, you know, the effects of it. And Ori comes in. And just that was, like, this soft, quiet, broken girl coming in to comfort, you know, this boisterous type of, I'm the best magician, whatever, on the planet. Yeah, that was so touching to me. I love it. I just like the use of language, though.
There's so many connection. People doing amazing work in genre fiction at the moment.
Yeah.
It's really just such a big thing, particularly, and I kind of hesitate to use the term grimdark, because it locks in certain presuppositions that are not entirely fair and reasonable, but this fantasy that pushes boundaries, that explores different nuanced sort of stuff and takes the genre in different directions, mixes in elements that traditionally perhaps wouldn't be in heroic fantasy. And you've got people like, you know, Joe Abercrombie and Mark Lawrence and Ed McDonald doing just really fun stuff in their own way. Brian McClellan, whose work I love, is the Powder Mage stuff, which is a kind of a roughly pre-revolution France and surrounds with magic, but the same sort of intricate politics, big cities and character, you know, despair, soldiers with PTSD, you know,
oh, right.
Which you so often don't get in fantasy. You know, well, we survived the battle and all my friends got chopped up, but I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm good. You know.
Well, I got a question, which isn't on the list, but I'm going to ask it anyways.
How dare you break format?
I think I've broken format all over the place here.
Yeah.
But anyway, what was your opinion of Oathbringer?
I actually haven't read it.
Oh, right, okay.
One of the things with a lot of series is I don't have a lot of choice over what I read.
Mm-hmm.
Given a choice, you're like 10 books in front of me, and five of them are continuations from authors I really enjoy, and five of them are books that no one's heard of.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so my reading ratio tends to be about four new books to one continuation.
Oh,
so
right.
I have a copy. The supplier sent me one, which is very nice. It's on my to read pile.
Yeah.
But currently I'm working my way through the tail end of Brian McClellan. So when I'm reading, when I get a sort of a day off to read something that I don't have to review or run my book club about, or just a new release.
Mm.
People are going to ask me about, because Brandon Sanderson will sell himself, you know.
Oh yeah, his name.
I read a lot of his stuff, and I love it. He's a great writer, and
he's got so many books.
You know that I know enough about Brandon Sanderson's works if someone comes in to ask me about it. But if I'd read Oathbringer instead of, say, Waste Tide by Chen Huifeng, which is a new Chinese science fiction writer, I need to know about that, because someone's going to come in and go, what's this Chinese science fiction cyberpunk book? Is it any good? I've never heard of the
amazing
author.
I'm writing this down. What was it called?
Waste Tide.
It's
translated by Ken Liu, who's the same chap who translated The Three Body Problem, the Hugo Award winner.
Oh, yeah. I've got that on my to-read list.
That's a phenomenal read. That whole series is really interesting. Chinese science fiction, the temptation is to go, it's enjoying a renaissance. No, it's not. Chinese science fiction writers have been writing amazing fiction for 30, 40 years. We've just noticed.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden, after the sort of arrival of Three-Body Problem, people went, wow, this is really good, and did the inevitable thing. And the same as they're doing with African science fiction. It's like you read something, it blows you away, and you wander in a week later and goes, is there any more?
Oats. Well, it's like the... Like I came in talking about Dresden Files and was like, well, you know, the new book hasn't come out yet, yada, yada, yada. And you just pop up a thing you might like this, which was Poison City. And that's based in South Africa.
Yeah.
And it's actually like the world building was like phenomenal. I like the uses of magic and things
and
like that.
It's so gritty. And Gideon Tau, I think, is one of the more interesting of the urban fantasy protagonists because... Quite often, you've got urban fantasy protagonists involved in law enforcement or something like that. And they're very rarely traumatized. They're very rarely troubled by the things that they've seen, whereas I think Gideon Tau comes across as a...
Oh, he freezes up.
He's like, he's broken. He's seen too many bad things. And, of course, he has the coolest familiar, I think you'll agree.
Oh, 100%,
You know, he's cooler than Harry's like disembodied skull. Just an alcoholic...
Dog.
Yeah. Misanthrope.
And I love that the introduction to that as well. Yes. So good. This big bad beast coming up to the portal, and then it's hamstrung by a little dog that comes through. I thought that was brilliant.
Like, oh, that's so it. I'm your guy.
Yeah. Oh, so good.
Effects come in later.
He does all the.
I am at the BBC.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, brilliant production.
So I was wondering, Stefan, what is your favourite part about running your bookshop?
Oh, God.
We can do least favorite as well. If
I think he said that with spreadsheets.
Oh, yeah.
I love the spreadsheets.
Oh, really? Yeah.
It's a really weird thing that numbers and catalogs and KPIs and all the sort of business sort of jargony stuff is the most irritating thing in the world when you're doing it for a company because it's constantly other people giving you these numbers. But when it's your own business, you're looking at, you know, it's just like watching your own garden grow. It's like, this isn't boring, you know, watching somebody else's garden grow is boring. Yours isn't. It's like every little thing that happens is interesting. And so good stats and good records are essential to any business. And so you're digging through, looking at stuff going, oh, okay, that worked, that didn't work. I'm happy about that. I'll change that. The most fun part, it's really hard to say. I love what I do so much.
Which comes through, honestly.
Occasionally, sometimes it's the sneaky stuff, actually.
The sneaky stuff?
The sneaky stuff. I'm going to give away some trade secrets.
Yeah, I'm excited. Okay.
Occasionally, I'll be going through a catalogue and I'll look at forthcoming releases and I'll see something just really obscure, something really unusual. It's a really niche item for a really niche taste or an edition or something like that. And I'll look at it and I'll think, I can think of two people who will lose their shit if they see this. But nobody else will even notice it exists. And so I'll order two copies. And I'll stick it behind my on the counter or behind myself on the shelf. Somewhere that's not overly prominent. Don't put it in the window because if it's such a niche item, it displaces something that's more popular. So, and then one of those two people will come in and they'll see it. And they'll lose their shit and they'll go, what's that? And you show it to them. And they go, wow, can I have it? And I'm like, it's only here for you. And I was like, I ordered it specifically with this moment in mind. But it's much more fun for you to come in and find this with no idea that it was going to happen.
Surprise.
Yeah, that's one of the most fun things.
I like that.
The other thing that I really love, because I've got a big commitment in the store to embracing all of the different things that genre fiction can do, is introducing somebody to something that's really different to perhaps what they would have seen. The last few years, the big ones for me have been Nora K. Jemisin, Cameron Hurley, Nnedi Okorafor, and Cixin Liu. Being able to get somebody to have a look at something that's really good that they wouldn't perhaps have gotten on their own, that is diverse, that is a different sort of author, that has different sorts of characters. And then they take it away and they come back a week later wide-eyed and go, give me more. It's like discovering an entirely new cuisine. You know, you suddenly go, I didn't know you could do that. And then they want to work their way through the entire menu, or in this case, the entire sort of library of this author's work, or this sort of take on genre fiction. And I love that point that somebody is now really interested in something that they didn't know existed before.
I'm enthralled. This is amazing. Yeah.
And that's just so much fun. It's such a great job. This is the best job in the world. Wow. I get to hang out with books. I get to hang out with, you know, people come in and talk, and it's always a pleasure. And I learn things from people because you can't read everything and know everything. So I'm constantly learning things from people. I've got crash test dummies. I've got some people whose job it is to help me read the things that I can't read in time.
And that's cool.
I've got a variety of people who I'll sort of foist advanced reading copies on, and they'll go away and read them and then write me these reports.
Oh, that's cool.
On the contents and how it sits in genre and stuff. And there really is. There's nothing negative about the job. There really is nothing. Even just sort of taking out the garbage is... There's really nothing. Nothing bad happens. You get no rude customers. There's nobody unpleasant. No one ever comes into a specialty bookshop to give you a hard time.
Mm-hmm.
There really is no downside. The closest thing to a downside is long hours.
Oh, yeah.
Long hours.
It's your shop.
Yeah, there's lots to do. But, you know, if you enjoy the actual work, then, you know, doing it for 12 hours is not... is not as odious as, like, you know, shoveling dirt if you're not in the mood or something.
That's cool. I like that. Oh, I'd love to own a bookshop. But as I said before, I don't want to deal with the customers. I just want a warehouse filled with books.
You just want to own a lot of books. This is the issue with... I get a lot of that. People go, I'd love to own a bookshop. But for any business, and I'm sure this goes for everything, there's the fun bit.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the back end. There's the technical bit. There's the, can you manage all of the other things that make the fun bit fun? Mm-hmm. And as someone told me years ago, and I've told other people, like, unless you enjoy the back end as much as you enjoy the front end, unless you're as committed to that, unless you're as committed, in my case, to spending hours going through catalogs, preparing spreadsheets, working out sales records, preparing purchase orders, organizing returns, unless you enjoy that as much as you enjoy talking to customers, you won't invest in it time-wise. And so you won't do a good job. And a lot of people buy a small business because they like the product. They don't like the guts, the machine.
No, that's fair. I wouldn't personally like the tech. I just want a lot of books. I just want to have a roaring fireplace, sit on an armchair and read books for the rest of my life. That's it.
That's totally it.
That's a dream.
That's a great dream.
With this next part, you're going to ask John three questions, and then you're going to recommend a book.
I'm going to flog something to John. Okay.
Wait, me? I thought you were doing this.
No, this
I'm
is you, John.
Now.
Yeah.
I've got his money already.
Yeah, he's...
Oh, right.
Yeah. I've got... walked in, and this isn't even part of your shtick, Stefan. This isn't even fiction. This is called Walker's Manly Exercises by Donald Walker. And this was first published in 1834, I believe. Yep, there it is, 1834.
Quite modern.
Yeah, and yes, up to date on medical science, for sure. And as you said, there's, what is it, after exercising, you know, down a beer and stuff like that?
Absolutely, it is a Victorian gentleman's exercise guide. This is another one of my you know, sort of secrets of business.
Mm.
A lot of the stuff that I have... isn't done from some pure, you know, clever business acumen or brilliant assessment of marketability. I will just see something in a catalog or in a stock list and I'll go, I have to know. And I'll order some because might as well get a few. And so I'm fortunate enough that I've got a customer base that's full of people of similar mind. And so I put stuff out and you see people and they look at it and they go, I have to know.
Yeah.
It's like, I did too.
I have to know.
I'm actually curious to know, is there a book that has just been sitting on your shelves
forever
and you haven't been able to find someone to buy it? Or are you just too clever for that ever to happen?
No, there actually is.
Okay. Ooh, okay.
There actually is.
Yeah, you can go
get it. I'll have to go and get it.
Yeah, that's all right. So, but not only has Stefan recommended this book, my eye has spotted the Art and Arcana for Dungeons and Dragons.
I wonder if that was put up there specifically to catch your eye.
Yeah, just like, oh yeah, it's just up there. But I've seen that and I was like, yep, that's something I want. There's so many cool things in here, honestly.
I've also seen Doctor Who and the Cricket Men, although I did get that on your email list and I was like, yeah, I need to read that.
That's fair. I mean, there's just... you've got to come in and just... There's a sense of exploration that can be done in here. Like, just going through all the books and fun stuff. Like, there's stuff up on the walls. You've got, like, the bookshelves and the stuff at the front, the stuff behind the desk. It's gorgeous. I love it so much.
Yeah, if you live in Perth, it's worth coming in just to see what it's like. But, of course... Stefan will sell you a book.
He will. I mean,
you come expecting to buy a book.
You won't have a choice in the matter. You will come in here thinking, I'm not going to spend any money. I'm not going to buy a book. And by the end of it, you will walk out with a book.
Well, I've got something you want.
Yeah, exactly. You've got something. Or 12. Yeah.
You may not know it yet, but I've got something you want. So,
nice.
Okay, so this book,
I've never quite managed to find someone that this is precisely in the niche for. And you'll understand in a moment.
It looks horrifying.
In the 1970s, there's a batshit crazy French science fiction animated film called Fantastic Planet.
Okay.
Animation freaks and film freaks will possibly recognize it. It's batshit crazy animation, really weird alien things and strange imagery. It's surrealist as hell. And it's based on a French novel that is just as batshit crazy. And I have a copy of the novel translated from the French of Fantastic Planet. So it's the translated version of the French novel of the completely batshit crazy surrealist science fiction post end of the world
kind of
thing that was made into an indecipherable film in the 70s. It's really, really niche. And I've yet to find anybody that it's the perfect thing for. Although they might be listening.
They might be.
If they're really into classic early animation and are familiar with Fantastic Planet, the movie, because a lot of animation people are.
I'm looking at it on YouTube. It's quite weird. There's a three-nosed monster eating a worm.
Whoa.
So this is the book on which this animation was based.
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
Oh, wow. It gets weirder.
Oh, it does.
It's out there. It was like decades before anybody would attempt anything that strange again.
It won the Cannes Film Festival as well.
I think it was one of those ones where art that is completely indecipherable and you just mysterious and you can't understand it must be good.
Yeah.
Open to interpret.
I want to be a good critic, therefore I must think that this is good.
There you go.
I don't understand any of this. He must be a genius.
So you must come in, anyone who's listening, and ask Stefan about Fantastic Planet by Stephen Wall.
I've deflected from the game, haven't I?
You have.
Asking this question.
Yeah. You have. Okay, now, I'm not going to sell you that book. So.
No. This is the perfect back cover there. The psychedelic sci-fi series, because that's exactly what I just saw.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like somebody has dropped 4 tabs of acid and just elected to write a book.
I recommend people take a few moments to Google Fantastic Planet and see if you can find a few minutes of footage, because it's... It's demented.
Sorry, yeah, I was probably a bit too loud there. My booming voice. So, all right, so the three questions.
I've got to sell your book. Okay.
Three questions. And John, you must answer truthfully, of course.
Oh, yes. I wouldn't dream of lying to Stefan. To you, of course.
Okay. All right. Here we go.
Three questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the rule of three. Three's a magic number.
Okay. Not 21.
No. We're not going to be here all day.
Yeah.
Okay, question number one.
All right.
Okay.
What sort of movies do you like?
Oh, anything by Christopher Nolan. So, Inception, Interstellar.
Batman.
The Batmans, yeah. But I'm not a big fan of DC at the same time.
Yeah, fair enough.
It was just the way he made the movies, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Inception is his favorite movie of all time.
Yes. Anything with a good plot twist is a good movie in my mind.
Oh, you're giving away information here. No.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I'm freely.
Yeah, this is how he gets you. He's told you he likes to eavesdrop, you know?
Yeah.
Can you think of a book that you read that made you like stay up late or miss a bus or something that actually sort of pushed you to read beyond the point where you would normally have put it down? Something you got totally lost in?
Mostly it happened when I was young, which is weird. So, like, The Time Machine, H.G. Wells. I'm thinking... I'm not the fastest reader in the world. So, like, other ones like Narnia were really easy to read. Not quite that young, though. Harry Potter, the later ones. Lost in. I love that feeling, though, when you're like, you just cannot put the book down.
I did that with Oathbringer, actually, going through that. Because with Oathbringer, well written, but I think it was just like a total left field. Because Way of Kings, Words of Radiance.
Yeah.
Where Words of Radiance ended, it was like that cliffhanger, like, oh, holy moly, what's going to happen next? And then literally it's just like, oh, nothing happens. It's just like, it's like a bulging eye. But the ending of Oathbringer was excellent. So it's the reverse of Poison City, in my opinion, where Poison City was really good. And if you think of a book as three acts, the first two acts were great. The climax was a bit, you know, iffy. Whereas the reverse was good for Oathbringer, where the first two acts were just like, but the ending was...
Sometimes I really like that when you read something and you're like, I'm not sure if this is worth reading, but you keep reading it and then the payoff is just amazing at the end. You're like, I get it.
Okay, so your answer to that question was what was...
Yep, that's good. Done. Okay, number three.
Oh, yep.
Science fiction or fantasy?
Both. Is that an answer? No,
which
I have
one
to
do you prefer?
One.
Yep.
Well, reading... I really like the Patrick Rothfuss novels.
Well done, John.
Yes.
You can have a hug. There you go.
Well, yeah.
Harry Potter, Narnia, those kinds of ones.
That's a lot of fantasy to me.
But at the same time, like, I do enjoy science fiction. Oh, I don't know. It's tough.
Mm-hmm.
It's really tough. I have to 51, choose one.
51%, 49% of the other?
Yeah.
Which is the 51?
51. I don't know.
Fantasy. It's definitely fantasy for you. I mean, judging literally the three books you just listed then was Rothfuss, Narnia, and what was the other one?
Harry Potter.
Harry Potter, you know, fantasy. Those are the three things that came to your mind. So fantasy would be your preferred method.
I guess so. Oh, this is too hard. This is too hard.
Three questions.
I mean, we're literally talking about myself here, so you'd think I would know.
All right. So, Stefan, with those answers, well, those very vague answers.
Sorry. They were a little bit. Yeah. I would...
What would you recommend? I'll buy it for him.
It's tricky. If we go a bit... It depends whether we're going dark or not. Because you've name-checked, like, Rothfuss, which is grimdark, but there's also the other fantasies were all kind of heroic, you know, your Narnia, sort of Harry Potter and that sort of stuff.
You did go through like a couple of genres there. Like, well, not genres, more like the child-friendly, family-friendly.
Yeah, true.
For something sort of William F. Nolan-y, and now it's quite a dark series, but... I think it would hit your sweet spot because it does have some beautiful structural things in it.
Okay,
it's quite confronting on a few levels because some of the characters are quite dark, but structurally it is just really interesting, and it's a trilogy.
Oh,
what's the first book called?
The first book is called Prince of Thorns. It's by Mark Lawrence. And it's got a really interesting protagonist because he's exploring a kind of a broken hero, a flawed hero. In fact, he could almost be seen to be someone who would, in another series, if you were to transplant this character, Prince Yorg, into another series, he'd be the villain. But
I like that.
Structurally, the series does some really interesting things with the way he tells the story. The first book... He doesn't do heaps of moving structure, but the second book and further on he does. And he'll give you pieces of the narrative in a different order.
Ooh,
He will give you the result of something, and he won't tell you how that result was achieved, but he'll tell you later because there's a context of a change in relationship and that sort of stuff.
Reminds me of like Pulp Fiction, where you see the kind of in the...
It does have a bit of that, and... There's a couple of moments when you suddenly realize that you've completely misunderstood the nature of the world.
I love it already. I need to read it now.
You're a terrible human being, Stefan, because that was meant to be him, and now I'm just like, I want this so much.
It's a great trilogy.
Wow, it sounds amazing.
It's very dark. Prince Jorg is a damaged, traumatized character. So,
sold it to Adam, that's for sure.
Look, it's a great series, and I tell people that, you know, be aware that grimdark fantasy is about... You know, intense,
some confronting.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And there are some people who've like you know, don't like the stuff as a result, which is fine. It's like, you know, you ask for the content that you like, and you should get the content.
Well, the whole thing about reading is entertainment. And I think, yes, I'm going for Rothfuss again, because I like his podcast that he had. And one of the best quotes he's ever done isn't from any of his books. It's from the podcast.
Mm.
And he's like, where reading fiction breeds empathy. Because, you know, you're putting yourself in the shoes of someone else, like 100%. Yeah. And with the grim dark type of stuff, for someone who's quite empathetic, I feel like that could be very impactful for them.
Look, it's particularly if the character is not your typical. The dynamic of Prince York is that he is deeply traumatized, but he survives and he finds a way to do it. He reminds me a lot, actually, of John the Bastard from Much Ado About Nothing, Shakespeare's play, who is like the half-brother of the prince. And he's in the play, he's recently been allowed to kind of join the prince's entourage. So he's kind of back in the prince's good graces. But he doesn't really like it. And people are kind of being nice to him. But there's a whole section where John is saying that he's like a muzzled dog, that he can't really express himself, that he has to be nice, that he has to pretend, and that in all honesty, he'd rather, you know, like be a canker than a flower in his brother's garden.
Mm.
And that, you know, he has to be honest, that he's a villain, and that he should sleep when he's tired and eat when he's hungry, and he can't choose these things anymore, and he's muzzled. And then his final line is like, if I had my teeth, I would bite. And there's sections with Mark Lawrence's books, particularly with Jorg, where Jorg is honest about, this is what I am, this is who I am, and in this situation, even though it may not be the best and smartest thing, I know what I am. And what I am is a person who is going to do this. And I love that honesty with the character. But it makes him kind of likable in the sense that you enjoy exploring him, but he's not nice. You know, I think there's a craft that seems to work in theatre, but doesn't seem to sort of translate as often into books as it should, where a really good actor plays a villain you absolutely hate. And at the end of the show, you go, he's so good, or she is so good, I hate them.
The villain you love to hate.
Yeah, you've taken me on this emotional journey, even though it was one of, like, rage. And it's not so often, I think, that in genre fiction that we get offered a narrator character that we can really explore that with, and Mark Lawrence does that. You like him and hate him, you can't decide which. I'm still conflicted.
Nice.
All right, I'm gonna buy that for you, John. Gonna happen. Oh goodness, I'm having a heart attack. No, I'm not, it's okay, just the random hiccup.
And I'm the one worried about making little noises and embarrassing
oh
myself.
No, you're fine. Oh please, you don't have to be embarrassed about this podcast. We do random crap all the time.
Yeah. I had a question for you, Stefan. Do you know of any underrated or up-and-coming authors that you think more people should get on board with?
Absolutely. My favorite author, who should be everywhere, in my opinion, because her work is just glorious, is an American author named Cameron Hurley. I love her stuff.
What genre is she?
She writes science fiction and fantasy. At the moment, mostly science fiction. She's got like a science fiction trilogy and a fantasy series. She's working on a standalone science fiction book called The Stars of Legion, which is just amazing. And a new one that's due out in the next week or so called The Light Brigade, where she's taken the kind of classic military science fiction of the era of sort of Joe Haldeman's Forever War and Robert Heinlein's Starship Troopers, and taken a similar kind of core premise and done her own thing. And it's a really clever book, because it's about, you know, militaristic humanity, you know, fighting in a war, and it's got time travel. And it's once again, narratively, the structure is so complex that you get to the end of it and it's a bit like one of those hand puzzles where it doesn't work until every piece is held in a particular way. All hold it, it just kind of goes click, and she kind of does that, and you get to the end of the book and the whole book just kind of goes click.
Oh, that's good.
And your brain just goes, Oh.
Satisfying.
You know, suddenly all the questions just get answered, and it's really clever. And then her afterwards, she talks about just how difficult it was to plan all the pieces. Oh, so
I love when authors do that, like the after. Yeah, that's cool. But I like being able to relate to the authors and that stuff.
And
so good.
Stars of Legion was, I think, a 2018 book. I think it was eligible for the 2018 Hugo. That was my pick for the Hugo. It didn't win.
Right.
Nora K. Jemisin won, and she absolutely deserved to, because her Broken Earth trilogy is stunning. So it was, but that was my emotional favorite, was Cameron, because I read Stars of Legion and it blew me away. For about 6 months, I just was giving it to people. You have to read this. I want to talk about it. And then I set it for my book club, and we sat around and we drank beers and we talked about it.
Nice.
And
that's good. I like that. Need to get in the book club. Oh, random shift work. Fun times. Oh, right. Okay.
So, yeah, Cameron Hurley is probably, and there's so many great writers at the moment.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But my emotional favorite is Cameron. If I had to look at all of the writers who've got stuff coming out, and one of my favorite fantasy writers at the moment, Ed McDonald, has a new book coming out in June, which is going to be awesome. There's a new Adrian Tchaikovsky book coming out. He's awesome. There's so many people doing great work. But Cameron Hurley is one of those writers, when I just hear the first hint in industry press, or when she tweets something that a new project has a kind of a date, that's one of those ones where you just go, ooh.
Excited.
Yeah. It's like, literally, she can ship books to me wrapped in brown paper with no title at all. Just go, Cameron wrote this. All right, I'll take it.
Yeah. I think, I remember when you were at your old location, and you had, it was actually John, I think it was you or Tyson, I can't remember.
It's probably Tyson.
We were walking along, and you used to have a stand with books wrapped in brown paper, but with a brief description.
Wasn't me.
Elizabeth's?
That was Elizabeth's.
Was it? Oh, yeah. No, because it was secondhand. It was secondhand, that's right.
Blind date with a book. That wasn't me. Nothing.
Blind date with a book. Yeah.
I get what they do, and it's a cool idea.
Mm.
I kind of do that.
Would you just recommend?
I do it the other way. Yeah. It's like, though you read the little three-line blurb, and decide whether or not you want the book. You come in and you tell me your three lines
exactly,
herb, and I'll give you the thing that you want.
Conversation, yeah. Which is about, so, yeah.
They're great people. I actually have a good relationship with the Elizabeth crowd. They're great fun. And it's nice. a really cool... No, there's no professional rivalry.
Really?
In Perth. No.
I thought there would be. Like, you'd hurl eggs at each other or something.
No. The Perth book scene is really, really interesting. There's this... We're an unofficial chain.
Mm.
If you walk into Diabolic in Mount Hawthorne and ask about science fiction, they'll tell you to come and see me. And if you walk into my store and you ask about music or any of the other art, design, and the cool stuff for Diabolic, I'll send you straight out to Mount Hawthorne or to Crow in Vic Park or to Beaufort Street Books in Mount Lawley, depending on things, or Planet in Mount Lawley. It's really, because we all know each other.
Yeah.
Everyone in the industry has worked either as colleagues or pretty, you know, close to each other for at one point or another. So it's not actually... And the closing of a bookstore is not good for anybody.
No. I hate when a bookstore is closed anywhere.
No. A couple of years ago, the Dimmicks store in the Hay Street Mall looked like it was going to close. And in fact, it did close, only to be reopened a little bit later by the head office. They sort of restarted it, and now it's staffed and all that sort of stuff. But at the time, there were people going, oh, you must be glad. I'm not glad.
Mm.
You know, 20, 30 booksellers just lost a job. There's nothing good about that. And they do stuff that I don't do. I do stuff that they don't do. I want more people in the industry, more people reading. Yep. You know, it's like this.
That's the best thing to do, yeah.
You know, wishing hateful shit on people who are basically another version of you is just madness.
Yeah.
Mm. That's fair. No, I think that's great. That's the best attitude to have.
So make sure you... Don't sabotage other people's podcasts, Adam, is the moral of that story.
Scary Time Walk, we're coming for you.
Hey, just make the table bigger. You know,
Totally. I like it. And no, like you said, I mean, you're each doing different things as well, which I think is, like, you have your core customer base, essentially. Like, I'm primarily interested in science fiction and fantasy. Like, I was literally me walking, I'm not trying to justify my actions in buying something from Elizabeth, but I literally was walking past, and I can't remember who I was with. It must have been with Tyson or something. And they were saying, "Oh, like the blind date with the book thing. That's like a cool idea." So I went and had a look, and it was Ray Bradbury's Carnival.
Cool.
Yeah, like that. And I was just like, obviously, I didn't know that at the time because it was blind date, and brought it, unwrapped it, and was like, "Okay, cool. Read it, loved it, fantastic.
It's good fun." Look, there's a whole bunch of things that different stores do.
Well, speaking of that, what events are basically coming up at Stephens that you want to
do? I've actually got nothing. I should be doing something later in the year with Juliette Merlier, as a WA writer. She's got a new book coming out. She specializes in a kind of Celtic-inspired, early Britain-inspired fantasy. It's great stuff, and she's a lovely, lovely lady. And she's got a new book coming out later this year. And I will probably be doing an in-store event, book launch, reading. And then she generally joins us for lunch when we do these things. So you can kind of hang out with the writer. Yeah.
What was the name of the author?
Juliette Merlier.
Nice. So I'm writing this down because that sounded amazing.
I'm really looking forward to her new book. It's about a bard, basically. I'm looking forward to it. We've had a brief chat about it along the lines of, because I've done several book launches with her. Are we going to do a thing? And she said, yeah, let's do a thing. So we're at that stage of doing a thing. I had one a couple of weeks ago, unfortunately, which would have been great to talk about, which was we had Charlie Jane Anders in the store, who was in WA for the West Australian Science Fiction Convention, SwanCom. And so she turned up to do a bunch of stuff with us, signed a bunch of books. So I've got a bunch of her books signed in hardcover and paperback for fans of Charlie Jane Anders, who does really interesting stuff. And we went to a chocolate shop. So we did a book. It started out in the bookshop.
I saw that on Facebook, actually. Yep,
book signing, book reading, hang out with the author. Then the author and all attendees went to the chocolate shop because Charlie does chocolate and bookshop tours in various cities. So I nicked her idea when she came to Perth.
Like
it. It'd be shameful not to introduce her to some WA chocolates. So we took her to the Margaret River Chocolate Shop.
Yeah.
And they were absolutely lovely. They gave her a chocolate quokka.
Nice.
Because, showing the local pride. And then we all went to the pub. And drank pints and talked about nerd stuff, and it was terrific. It was a really the turnout wasn't as many people as I thought were going to come, but it meant that those of us that did turn up got a lot more attention. So, but Charlie was just great fun, really, really cool.
That's cool.
So I recommend that you all either subscribe to the list or like the Facebook page, or perhaps both of Stefan's books.
Mm-hmm.
So when there's the next event,
I do. The book clubs is a tricky one because I'm thinking I might have to start a second one if we get too many people there's sort of a cutoff and stuff. I do an email newsletter that I send out once a month. You can subscribe to on the website, stephansbooks.com.au. Mm-hmm. If you do, you get one email once a month with a heads up on what's coming out. I write a little bit about forthcoming titles, what I think is cool and interesting, try to put stuff on your radar or let you know who's doing what and whether or not something is perhaps not gotten a lot of attention, but that I think it deserves it. And other than that one email once a month, I leave people completely alone.
I think we're going to cut that one, John, just because we're running a quite a time now, aren't we? How long is this at the moment?
We're at 5 minutes past the hour.
Oh, that's not too
We've
bad.
We've got plenty of time.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm going to override you. I'm going to veto your veto of
you
my
can.
Topic.
So, okay. Well, I'm excited now. This is going to be interesting.
Well, this is a... Yep, sorry. Yep.
So, I've just had a baby, which means my wife is on maternity leave at the moment, has lots of time at home.
Yep.
She is just picking up the writing hobby for the first time in a while.
That's cool.
Yep.
And I've written some stories myself because I have this dream of one day being a filmmaker. It'll never happen, but the hobby keeps you going, right? So I was wondering, as someone who has read a lot of books, sold a lot of books, and heard a lot of things about books, what do you think creates a good story, and we can bring it back into our own writing, or anyone else listening who is into the writing hobby?
Yeah, for sure.
That's really interesting. I don't think there is any one thing. The minute you decide, you need a protagonist, someone will come along and write a novel or short story that doesn't have a protagonist.
Wow.
If you suddenly decide, you can't arbitrarily just take something out. You can't write a story backwards. You can't write it with no this. You can't do that. Someone will do it. I don't think there's an absolute rule for technical stuff, mechanical stuff, and kind of the art and structure of writing as a skill, as a craft. I don't know. It's a bit like, it's like art. It's hard to define what it is, but you know it when you see it.
Mm.
There are a couple of books I'd recommend, though.
Oh,
Stephen King wrote a book called On Writing, which is very well regarded. And a few years ago, Fiona McIntosh also wrote a book on writing, the name of which escapes me at the moment. So there you go, you've caught me. I can't remember a book.
We've done it. It was bound to happen.
Pack up the podcast. Yeah.
It was bound to happen sooner or later. But Fiona McIntosh would be her book on writing is really interesting, particularly since she's got such a broad genre base. She's written crime. She's written fantasy. She writes a kind of bit of contemporary fiction and kind of historical fiction and stuff.
How to write your blockbuster.
There you
nice.
Go.
Because I've read On Writing. I bought that from Shakespeare and Co. in France, actually.
But that one is really interesting because Fiona's net as a writer is quite broad. I love her fantasy. She's written some crime that's recently been reprinted, some very cool crime novels, and is doing a kind of sort of historically set character driven fiction. She's a lot of her books have kind of fallen into a sort of Bryce Courtney kind of sweet spot now that we're not getting those. That's the kind of market thing that she does a lot now, and she's utterly lovely. I got the opportunity to work with her a couple of times. She's lovely. Once again,
name like, dropping.
There are no bad writers either in terms of like interaction. I've never worked with an Australian writer that I didn't really enjoy working with. You know, go to conventions and festivals and things. Once again, this is the weird thing about the whole sort of nerd community. At least my experience of it in WA and as a bookseller and a book vendor at conventions and that sort of stuff is that pretty much it's like it's all good.
I want to know what's been a surprising read for you in a good way. So you've gone into, not so much with a negative experience, but just like, oh, check this book out, read it, and it's blown you away. What would be that book for you? Because I know this is a random thing to ask and, you know, you might need a second to prepare, so I'll add some filler. For me, I'd say the book that surprised me in its, not so much quality, but something that you could say spoke to me, if you will, has been a couple of the Warhammer 40K books, which surprised me, to be perfectly frank. The standalone ones or the Horus Heresy. We've spoken about them before on the podcast because that's pretty much the only, I know it's a sin for me to say this, but that's pretty much the only sci-fi exposure I've had when it comes to literature. Grievous sin, I know. But
it's changed a lot in the last few years. Like 15, 20 years ago, writing media tie-ins was you know considered turned you into a hack . It was like, in fact Sean Williams, Australian writer, has written a bunch of once again very very cool stuff. Got a gig, this must be 10 12 or more years ago, writing Star Wars novels for the sort of the Star Wars, this is before the Disney and the canon crunch and that sort of stuff.
Yes.
And he turned up at a science fiction convention wearing a t-shirt that said hack. I think it was about that time started to get lots of really good authors writing tie-ins. Previously, it was the perception that it wasn't like, you know, decent authors or it wasn't serious work. But over the last few years, it's really become something that the publishers invest in, that the game companies invest in, or the sort of multimedia. They invest in getting really good writers to write their tie-in material. So you've got, you know, A-list writers writing the stuff not under pseudonyms anymore. And you look back at some of it and realize that a lot of the reputation was undeserved. There were really good writers doing very cool stuff within game universes for years, but the perception was, well, if it's a Dungeons and Dragons novel or if it's a if it's a Star Trek novel, then it by definition it's going to be pedestrian and unremarkable. It's like, no, it's about the same chance of getting great art as there is for everything else.
True. Yeah, I agree with that. But I also liked Mythos by Stephen Fry.
Yes.
That blew me away.
Yeah.
Because
that's not a surprise, though, is it?
No, because I listened to it on Audible.
Right.
Because I had the free book. And I figured, all right, I'm going to give this a crack, to give it a listen to. I think what sells it for me is actually his, because he narrates it. Because he wrote it and narrated it.
Yeah.
And his narration is what really kicked me. Like, it's quite humorous. Mm. Yeah, I yeah, I just think that was a good, that was a surprising one. Because I was going into it thinking, you know, kind of old Greek mythology. Mm. And I'm thinking, this is going to be a bit of a drawl. But he adds a good comedic spin on it, which I quite enjoy. Because he had another one, didn't he? After
Heroes. Heroes, which is more about the heroes of Greek legend. Yeah. So, to answer your question. Yep.
Not a surprising one.
For me, it was probably Girl with All the Gifts.
And what's the premise of that one?
Well, it's a zombie novel.
That goes on my list.
And I looked at it and I went, oh, okay. And I think I got a preview copy. And I'd read some of M.R. Carey's other stuff, which was really interesting. And I thought, okay, I'm going to read this because he's a great writer.
Mm.
But zombies, you know, this is like after World War Z and everybody's kind of zombied out. I'm like, okay.
Oh, they made a movie of it.
Yeah, the movie's actually pretty good. It's a different interpretation of the story. Okay. It's good and it's kind of kept a lot of the essence of it. But because the narrator of the book, Melanie, her emotional journey and her internal monologue and her internal processes are so interesting and so compelling. Mm. It's difficult for an actor, although the actress who plays Melanie in the movie is really good.
Mm.
It's hard to convey all of that because it is her journey. But I was expecting a good zombie novel, but I wasn't that enthusiastic. Okay, it's going to be zombies and stuff. And then you end up with this really interesting thing, and to discover that that Mike Carey doesn't like the things about zombie books that I don't like, which is the two big problems with zombie fiction for me is how and why.
Mm.
How can, if dead tissue is animated, does that mean physics doesn't count anymore? Are we all going to float off into space? Mm. You know, what part of physics suddenly stopped working to make this happen?
It ruined your immersion.
Yeah, and why? Why is it happening? And Mike Carey answers both questions.
Well,
and with a way that makes sense. It's a little bit, it's a bit weird science-y, but it makes sense. And you go, oh.
That means you wouldn't like World War Z, the book?
I actually like the book because it's a very clever deconstruction of the style by doing it. I mean, the movie.
The way it was written.
Was ridiculous.
Oh, thank you. Yes, 100% agreed. Mm-hmm.
It should have got a bunch of documentary filmmakers and done it as a mockumentary with like mock-up television footage and stuff from, you know, CNN and Fox and stuff.
Can you think like doing it like that would have saved them money as well? Because like this,
and then they wouldn't have had to make it a giant Pepsi ad.
Yeah, exactly. The Pepsi at the end. Yeah, 100%.
No, you would have needed, was it 8-10 stories in World War Z?
There's heaps of them. Yeah.
I mean, but like the interviews.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like, each one of those, you have to nail it.
Mm.
You know, each of the audiobook has got people like Henry Rollins and stuff on it.
Oh, it's got it's got quite a few.
Each of those vignettes, you have to nail, and you have to do it in such a way that it hangs together as a picture of the world. It's a very difficult project to do for an audience primarily that probably wouldn't appreciate clever a mockumentary it was, because you'd have to never break. Keep it completely serious, do it clean, and you have to nail every interview, every trauma, every tear, every frightened memory. All of that has to ring through as if you're watching a news program.
Yeah.
That's hard.
And I think Max Brooks did a really good job with the book.
Because the book does all that. Reading war memoirs or something.
There's like literal emotion in one of the, like where the broken girl, the girl like who's a rehabilitating feral, and she talks about the events in the church that took place. And oh my god, like I was reading that, like I literally choked up a bit when I read that at the end. I'm just like,
it should be done. Someone should do it. That would be amazing.
But they'll have to give it a new name now. It won't be able to be World War Z.
Well, yeah,
it'll have to be like How the World Ended, the documentary or something.
Yeah.
But I could use his other title. Like, is it?
Zombie Survival Guide?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. You could do that. You could just hook that. And you could, in fact, you could interpose the sections with bits from Zombie Survival Guide.
Yeah, that'd be
cool. As if this is here's the story of what happened and here's what.
And here's how you could have defended against
and
it.
And here's what, when it happens again, if it happens again.
That's cool. So, I like that.
I like, also people might be Googling the title and accidentally come across our podcast. So,
Nothing wrong with like that. But Girl with All the Gifts is my, I kind of expected it to be good because Mike Carey's great, but I didn't expect
that good
to be so clever and to the Another one, actually, I'll give you a second one. It's another zombie novel that it just reminded me of, where it went somewhere completely unexpected and did my head in. Fiend by Peter Stenson. The premise of that one is once again bizarre, that you're kind of somewhere in the sort of opening part of the book. And it's like a guy staggers out from the back room of his house, and he's an addict, and he's been on like a crack bender for weeks, and looks out the front window of his house, and there's a big Rottweiler out in the street barking at a little girl, and he's like, big Rottweiler, little girl, big Rottweiler, little girl, barking, 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 baring its teeth, and he's looking at this going, oh no, this is going to be horrible. And then the little girl jumps on the Rottweiler and rips out its throat with her teeth. And his first thought is, I got to slow down. And it turns out the zombie apocalypse has happened while they were on a bender.
Ah, right.
But while they're taking drugs, they smell bad. So the zombies stay away from them. And so you've got this little group of like serious junkies who are now navigating a city full of zombies that if they stay high, the zombies won't bite them.
Good dynamic.
It's kind of hard to function when you stay high and they're running out of drugs.
That's a good. Oh, wow. I like that. That's a good twist. I like that. That's a different one. I have never heard anything like that before.
It's bizarre. It is an absolute hoot.
Is there anything you wish to plug? Any other books? Anything like that you want to throw at our audience to recommend to enhance their chances of surviving the apocalypse? Or any other topics you wish to discuss?
I'm not sure, actually. Let me think.
This podcast is brought to you by Schweppes. Stay fresh.
No. Definitely is.
That's all right.
Send us money.
Stay fresh?
Yeah.
I don't think that's... Unless you're using Schweppes in an entirely sort of non-recommended way.
Do you guys not give yourself enemas with Schweppes lemonade? No?
It's the bubbles?
It's buzzy, yeah.
It's like an aero bar. It's the human aero bar.
So good. Oh, man.
Not really. I mean, there's so many cool things coming. May is going to be a really cool month for stuff.
What's coming out in May?
There's one that has just arrived for post-apocalyptic fans. It's called A Boy and His Dog at the End of the World.
Okay. That actually sounds really cool.
And that's
How many books, out of curiosity, have you written down that Stefan has recommended?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and this will be the 8th. So, wow. 8 books.
And so basically it's a post-apocalyptic world or post-collapse world, because the apocalypse is kind of different. Sort of post-collapse world. And this young boy has never really seen very many people, that he's sort of grown up in the aftermath. And then a stranger comes to town and to the house rather. And he talks to the stranger, and the stranger tells him stories of the ruined cities and the people in them and that sort of stuff. And then when the stranger leaves, he steals the boy's dog. And the boy realizes that his dog has been stolen, and so he wants to go and get him back. And it's this kind of coming of age thing, but also this journey to get his dog back.
Yeah.
And so he has to go follow the stranger. And so it's sort of into the ruined cities and all of that sort of stuff. It's kind of like, you know, Old Yeller in a Wasteland or something.
Lassie. Tearing out the throat.
So, yeah, the post-apocalyptic stuff and post-collapse stuff is all over the place. But there's also, you know, lots of cool science fiction.
I mean,
fiction,
it's a good
fantasy.
Commentary on where people think society's heading, essentially. Like, be it authors and people actually buying those type of books.
People like making podcasts about it.
Yep. Like, I am 100% getting that How to Invent Everything.
It's essential.
There is no doubt.
Oh, wow.
That is happening, because that is exactly what... I just think about it all the time. Like, we actually discussed off air how to make bread. Like, because I have no idea how to make bread. Like, the yeast, because you've got to go down to the fundamental stuff, like grinding the flour, you know, all this type of stuff, grinding the wheat in the flour, rather. The yeast, I had no idea how to make yeast until you just told me.
How to make a millstone.
Yeah, all that type of stuff.
Well, see, the thing with yeast is we get it in packets now, but it used to be you use a little bit of the old bread to make the new bread. So you just constantly got bits of bread with
the mother dough.
And sourdoughs and stuff, and beegars, which is a type of fermented yeast, and all sorts of stuff. It's really good fun once you start getting into this and you realize how useless you are.
Yeah.
You don't know how to do anything.
Get the book, folks, and become a productive member of the post-apocalyptic world. Or post-collapse world.
Or indeed, if you're thrown back in time.
100%.
Could happen.
Mm-hmm. I'm fairly fairly confident it's going to happen to one of us at some stage.
Yes.
Well, Stefan, it has been an absolute joy and pleasure
being here
chatting with you. I love coming here, honestly. This is an idealized version of paradise for me.
Mm.
All these books. Oh, science. I'm going to go and spend far too much money now. it's going to be great. Any closing comments, John?
I was just going to say maybe Stefan, all he needs to do is like... just have you come and that's enough to keep the store running day to day.
Maybe. I think I might need to get a second job now just to pay for everything.
More would be better. I'm always looking for new people. Also, it's one of the things that I love about the business and that I enjoy about doing it is that because the scale of the business and because I get to make all the decisions, the store kind of mutates. It changes based on what people buy. And I love that about all small businesses is that if you go somewhere and you ask for something, eventually they stop waiting for you to ask. They just make the coffee the way you like it. There's always one muffin left because they know you're coming. Nice. And for me, it's like it changes what I order. So when people are interested in stuff, I get more of that. For example, Urban Fantasy, we do loads because loads of people like it. And once you've read all the Dresden Files, then you're going to read all of the, you know, Ben Aronovich, and then you're going to read Paul Crilly, and then you're going to read Benedict Jacker. And eventually you're going to go, what's next? I have to have a next. So as soon as you start the beginning of that chain, I'm already looking for the thing.
Next
yeah.
Up. Yeah.
And I love that. So,
what's the next? Because I can't remember. I looked it up, and I need to buy it actually. So I'll write that down on my list as well. The next book in Poison City, that series.
The third one or the second?
Second
one.
One.
Clockwork City.
Okay. Radio.
Pretty sure it's Clockwork City.
Yeah, now we're looking at pretty all sure. over the store for it.
I have to check.
No, that's all right. Clockwork City. Writing that down. Yeah,
Clockwork City. Good.
Clockwork City. Yep, fair enough. I'm quite happy with how this goes. We should make this a semi-regular thing. Come in, city. There's a bar next door. We can get some pizza. I like that.
I'd do that. It's great fun. So this is why I think I'm so good at what I do. That the fact that I wasn't entirely sure about Clockwork City bothered me, so I had to get it.
Confirm.
And if it's that sort of thing, I wonder if this person, then I have to check it on the computer or find if the publisher knows, send an email to the publicist, just because these things interest me so much, I have to go and do something about it. And I figure once I've done it, I might as well get some and see if anyone else wants to play.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So any closing comments for you, John? Do you have anything you wish to say?
Well, I just wanted to reiterate, I know that sometimes you go to a bookstore and the people there, you have to explain to them very painstakingly, no, I want this book by this author and I can't remember the title or something, and they might have to look it up. But here you come to Stefan's book and you say, oh, I think it was this book, or you could even say what genre you want and Stefan will have the book for you.
Absolutely. It's so much cool stuff. And if there's nothing here you like, and it might happen, I mean, it hasn't happened yet, but it might, I'll get something.
That's a challenge, folks. If you can come in here and be like, I want something along this vein, Stefan, if it doesn't have it, he'll order it in for you.
If you can come up with a combination of ideas that I've never heard of, that will bother me so much that I will go and find someone who's done it, just because
time travel.
Midget adventure.
Well, it's
Game of Thrones.
If you say something, I'm going to be furious.
Yeah, this kind of Game of Thrones, isn't it?
Or Tyrion, I guess, yeah. He's actually thinking about it now.
What have we done?
The Piano Adventure, there's actually a science fiction story, I'm trying to remember the title of, about a guy who gets a time machine and he uses it to go into variations of the future and steal music from A-list artists so that he can bring it back to his time. And I forget what it was called now.
This was written for me.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So actually, there's a film that's just recently been released, I think, about a guy who wakes up in a world where the Beatles never existed.
Oh.
And he remembers all their songs, and so he becomes like world famous for writing all the Beatles songs because he remembers them and no one else in the world.
Ooh.
I don't know what it's called. It was about a month or so ago I saw the preview of a little promo ad thing. And I thought, well, if you knew something about the world that nobody else knew.
Yeah, that would be cool, yes. And like so, waking up in the past with all this knowledge of how to invent everything.
But there is a book about a musician. There's a few books about science fiction musicians, actually.
See, that's if you need any more reason to come to Stefan's
exactly.
Book. Piano time travel, the two things that I just randomly thought of.
Yep.
All right. Mm-hmm. So thanks very much for coming on the show.
Thanks for coming and setting all this up, and it's great fun.
Yeah, I love talking to Stefan. It's fantastic. It's an adventure. The conversation just wildly goes everywhere. It's great, as all conversations should do. So thank you for listening, folks. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, if there's any concerns, don't bother. But questions and comments, I'm happy to receive. John, email address for us?
thenerdsway@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm. And now, if you want to say something to us on Twitter, that is...
Oh, right. You were stopping to let me...
Yep. Yeah,
thenerdsway_pod.
Mm-hmm. And if, Stefan, do you have any email address or anything you wish to plug for us?
Well, you could always contact me at stefan@stefansbooks.com.au or mail@stefansbooks.com.au. We're on Twitter, Stefan's Books, where I post a bit. we've just recently started to play with Instagram. Badly, I might add.
Oh, yes.
I can't take a decent photo, and I know sod all about technology for someone who runs a science fiction bookshop. My Instagram is aspirational at best.
Mm-hmm.
And we also do a bit of stuff on Facebook, which is also just Stefan's Books.
Yeah, cool. Nice. All right, well, check everything out, folks. Thank you for joining and listening.
Oh, we have a website as well, stefansbooks.com.au.
Yeah. Thank you for joining. If you wish to check us out, those are the links, and we'll put all that in the show notes as well, I'm sure, John. Just giving you all the work.
Ooh, yeah. Wow.
Nothing new
working
there.
Working me hard.
We hope you enjoyed it, and we look forward to chatting to you all next time. Thank you, and stay safe out there.
All right, so...
see if I can get used to hearing my voice.
Once upon a midnight dreary, while I pondered weak and weary, over many quaint and curious volume of forgotten lore... while I nodded nearly napping, suddenly there came a tapping, as if someone gently rapping at my chamber door. Sometimes that would have been awesome! how's the sound on that, John?
Oh, it's sounding good.
Magnificent.
We may get the occasional...
child running past.
Well, this is the problem with being stuck in the middle of the city. Yeah. You have people, which is an advantage professionally, but... be somewhat inconvenient when you don't want
doing a recording podcast.
One of the bad things about running a bookshop is you need people to buy the books.
I wouldn't say it's a bad thing, but as you know, Lux Interior once said, people ain't no good.
Yeah. I'd love to have a bookshop, but I just don't want to deal with people. So essentially what I want is a warehouse filled with books.
The reason you don't want to have a bookshop is probably because you don't want to deal with spreadsheets.
I'll do the
spreadsheets for you.
Oh, there you go. Good. Yeah, I'll just hire you on.
I live and die on numbers. I spend hundreds and hundreds of hours going through catalogs and looking for the bizarre and the unusual, and then I bring them into the store, and then someone buys them straight away, and
you
go and look for another one.
Well, like this.
Oh yes,
that's a perfect example. Oh.
Walker's Manly Exercises.
You are an evil man, Stefan. That's all.
Did
I'm
you already purchase that, or is it just here in case you want to do some exercises?
It's just, yeah,
well,
just,
I'm going to purchase it. I'll just leave it back on the
inspirational
shelf. Yep. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Oh man, that's so good. Should've...
it's not really my brief, but yeah.
No, I know.
I am the weirdest of my customers.
Well, I mean, you've got to love what you do. Oh, so good. Right. Okay. All right. So we're recording.
Yes, we are. I'd like to record the preamble where people are having conversations because you might come up with gold in there, and then I kick myself and I record it.
Damn, now that we've turned the bike on, everyone's gotten boring.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Look how hilarious that... my goodness.
What is he doing?
He's running, apparently.
Oh, yes, there's instructions on how to run and climb a stile and stand and squat.
And you must have a top hat when you run.
Indeed, and a cravat and a waistcoat and instructions on afterwards how you have some small beer. And
I just
love that alcohol is built into part of the gentleman's exercise routine.
I did not see that, and I think that's pretty good, actually, yeah.
Absolutely. I don't think anybody's going to lose any weight from this.
No.
But... very popular. Someone should set up a gym. This Victorian era Manly Exercises gym with that's small beer and sherry. Maybe you just sort of do it Victorian style and you have servants do all the heavy lifting.
Oh, get the peasants to do it. Yes, that works.